Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The race for Columbus City Council District 7 is one of the first truly competitive contests for a city council seat in recent memory. We'll hear from both candidates in the race later this hour. But first, let's get some insight into how this city council race has played out over the last few months. There have been heated debates, negative mailers, and disagreements over some issues. Plus, nearly $1 million has been raised by the candidates. That's a lot of money for a local election. Joining us now with more on this race and other things on Tuesday's ballot is WOSU News reporter George Shilcock. Welcome back, George.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So I mentioned that this is the first truly competitive city council race in recent memory. Tell me a little bit about why there haven't been competitive races.
You know, that's a great question. A lot of people would tell you a lot of different things for, like, the reasons why. I think one big thing to note is that there's often, like, one or two candidates that will be running for a seat. And once they get elected, they'll often be endorsed by their fellow city council members, by the Franklin County Democratic Party and other groups. And they'll often stay in office. There aren't often a lot of challengers to this seat. And, you know, it's hard to challenge an incumbent also. You have to have funding. You have to have groups backing you. You have to be able to build a good campaign to be able to do that. So it's often tough to field a candidate, especially in a big city like Columbus, where you're running citywide. You're trying to get the votes of everybody in the city. And that's what this race is too, even though we have this district system, right? This is District 7, which covers downtown and much of the surrounding neighborhoods of downtown. And they're not just seeking their votes, they're seeking everyone's votes in the city.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you win in District 7, you have to win citywide.
Exactly, yes.
So there's two candidates in this race. We will talk with them later in the hour. Tiara Ross, an assistant city attorney, and Jesse Vogel, an immigration attorney. They're both Democrats. They're both attorneys. How do they differ? Where do they differ?
So Tiara Ross is an assistant city attorney, right? She works for Zach Klein at the city attorney's office. She mostly deals with their property action team. She is also kind of works with the inspector general for the police, right? Handling like the civilian police review board. She has sort of built up her career inside the city system, working through the problems, through the city's infrastructure, making a lot of those connections, right? Jesse Vogel, on the other hand, if we're just talking differences between attorney experience, right?
Yeah.
He's worked for legal aid. He's worked for CRIS, which is Community Refugee Immigration Services, right? Mm-hmm. And working for these nonprofit groups and outside of the city system, trying to work with renters, trying to work with immigrants and make sure they get their problems solved, again, from outside the city system. You can kind of see where I'm going here, right? This is sort of an insider versus outsider thing from the start, if you just look at their experiences as attorneys. And that's kind of what the race has become, right? Mm-hmm. That's both candidates are Tiara's trying to tout her experience, touting her connections, saying that's what makes her a good candidate for this role, right? Mm-hmm. Jesse is coming at this saying, like, hey, what the city is doing may not be working for everyone, and I want to come in and remember, they're both Democrats, but he's saying he wants to come in and sort of shake things up, question things more, and try to bring about some differences there.
And let's talk a little bit about the reporting you've done on the money in this race. I mean, there's a lot of money going around for a little local election. Jesse Vogel was criticized early on because a lot of his money was from outside the city. But I understand in the most recent financial report, he fixed that, right?
Really, the last two financial reports, he's sort of fixed that. And if you look at it, if you look at where he's getting his money, he's still getting a lot from out of state. It's not an insignificant amount, but most, more than probably 70, 80% of his funds are from within the city of Columbus, if not the Columbus metro area. And he's been sort of holding a lot of in-person fundraising events where if you look at the line items for these campaign finance reports, it says Columbus, 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 maybe a Massachusetts there, but Columbus, 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 Bexley, something. It looks like that, right? Tiara Ross is still fundraising a significant amount of money, right? She's getting, I think in the last financial report, she got somewhere between $30,000 and $60,000. And since the start of the race, over $100,000 from donors, from the community. But there is another key to her finances, mm-hmm. which is what we call in-kind contributions. That means another group, another campaign is paying for your stuff. Okay. Right. And it's sitting city council members for the most part. Emmanuel Remy, Rob Dorans, and Christopher Weich are doing a lot for her digital media, paying for her consulting. You know, they all have the same campaign consultant, and mm-hmm. they're working together. They're running as a slate because they've all endorsed Tierra. Right. And they're sort of helping her out and paying for a lot of this. And it's a very significant amount of money. For the first few financial reports, it was in the tens of thousands of dollars from these sitting city council members. In this last report, it was over $155,000 from them.
Okay. So the three city council people you just mentioned, though, city voters will see them on the ballot. They have no opposition.
They have no opposition this year. I haven't really checked, but I don't think there's a registered write-in candidate mm-hmm. for these either. So it's really just you vote for Remy, Dorans, or Weich, or you know, or you can leave it blank, I guess. It really depends. But like you can have that option mm-hmm. still.
And so basically, if they had campaign money, they didn't need to use it because they, right? And so did they give it all to Tierra Ross? Is that basically?
I wouldn't say all of it. Okay. You know, like I remember looking at Rob Dorans's campaign account, and he has a lot of money there, right? And he's not flooding it all into this race, mm-hmm. but he is giving a significant amount of money still.
All right. This is 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides. We're talking about the Columbus City Council race and other issues on the ballot for city voters on Tuesday. With us is WOSU News reporter George Shilcock. So we will hear from Jesse Vogel and Tierra Ross later in the hour. So I wanted to move on to another issue that is on the ballot on Tuesday for city voters. There are three seats on Columbus's Board of Education, and there are six candidates. George, you interviewed all six candidates. Summarizing what six candidates have to say is hard, but can you tell me a little bit about this race, the three seats, the six candidates, but they're running for all of them. It's not like one seat each.
Okay. You betcha.
Yeah.
We had three people on the current board choose not to run again. Two of them are the longest serving members on the current board, Ramona Reyes and board president Michael Cole. Mm-hmm. Christina Vera, also a past board president, is also not running. So that kind of creates a power vacuum there. There's a real chance to reshape the board and mm-hmm. try and get people's a new perspective in there, right? Mm-hmm. We have six candidates who are Antoinette Miranda, who is a former OSU professor. She just retired, chair of one of the departments here. Patrick Katzenmeyer, who works for Pizzuti Companies, a developer. Mm-hmm. Jermaine Kennedy, he's with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. Those three names, I'll pull aside for a moment. They were the ones who were endorsed early on by the Franklin County Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And they've really gotten a big advantage and step up from that because they're on that sample ballot handed out to voters, just like Tierra Ross is. The other three candidates, Munir Lynch, Janice Keyes, and Kimberly Mason. Munir Lynch is a former Columbus Alternative High School student. Okay. And he's running I know what the schools are currently like, and I want to bring that perspective. Janice Keyes is a community activist. She's been running a strong campaign as well. I just saw a billboard of hers in the Linden area.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of yard signs around, but there's a billboard. And then Kimberly Mason as well. She's former Ohio Bankers League employee with higher education stuff. And she's sort of bringing sort of an outside perspective as well. And she's doesn't have that advantage that those first three have. And this is sort of a race to see who can get on this board and who can help get on and deal with their current budget situation, which mm-hmm. that's a whole nother
show. Yeah.
Yes.
For our listeners, George just did that. He named all six candidates, where they're from and what they stand for, with no notes. So very impressive. He knows what he's talking about here. So six candidates. It's a lot to explain on the radio in a few minutes. But if you go to WOSU.org, you produced six stories, one for each candidate, right?
Mm-hmm. I've done that. I've covered candidate forums for them as mm-hmm. well. So there's a lot of that you can read up on these candidates. We have a lovely voter guide as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure if all the stories are in that one place, but they'll have the summaries of the races and a lot of those stories linked in there.
Right. So you can read about all six candidates if you find each of the six stories with the names that George just said. But you mentioned that since you did all six of those interviews, things got a little more intense in the race because the board announced they needed to cut $50 million. Do you feel like that's changed the race in these last couple of weeks?
I'd say for sure. Like mm-hmm. it was already a sticking point before the primary, right? There was a lot of candidates that were upset with the current board. There were 10 candidates back then.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of frustrations expressed about the school closure process. Well, now they're in a $50 million budget deficit, and they're talking about cutting high school busing. They're talking about more school closures. They're talking a lot of – I was just at an event last night where they were trying to inform the community of this, and that's sort of the focus here. Obviously, there are a lot of other things to a school board race, such as student outcomes. They're considering an AI policy right now that could be voted on by these candidates. We don't really know yet, but there's a lot in this race for sure.
All right. So six candidates for three seats. And then another issue that voters are going to see, there's several ballot issues that city voters will see on their ballot. But one for the city will be listed as issues 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And this is allowing the city to borrow $1.9 billion to do a lot of things. That includes building more affordable housing, improving recreation and parks, and public utilities upgrades. But George, you found something interesting about this bond campaign, about the donors supporting it. Tell me about that.
So if you look at these campaign finance reports, which I know they're boring to some, but I find them to be the most interesting thing about campaigns, right? Mm-hmm. You can see that they less than 36 donors gave to this campaign with an average donation in thousands of dollars. And they are either development companies directly, or they are developers themselves, or even a lot of big names with a lot of money here in Columbus, like Jimmy and Dee Haslam, who own the Columbus Crew and Cleveland Browns, right? There are a lot of people who stand to benefit, and they often get contracts from the incentives coming from this bond money, right? The city gives out incentives to help build housing, to help encourage development, commercial development as well. And a lot of these companies are the usual people who get this money.
So you, there's not really a no campaign to this bond money. Basically, it'll allow the city to borrow $1.9 billion. The negative would be if something happens with the city finances and they can't pay it back, then taxpayers are on the hook for it. Am I summarizing that correctly?
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, the city has a history of paying this stuff back. They've done bonds in the past, nothing to this amount. This is the most historically high amount of bonds that they're seeking to get, but they have a good credit rating and they've paid this back in the past. There will always be people who vote against stuff like this. Like, it's not going to be a unanimous vote in November, but, you know, there's not really, like you said, there's not really an organized campaign against this.
And you talked with Catherine Terser, right, with Common Cause Ohio. She basically said it should be okay, but it might, you're like, how, summarize what she said. Yeah.
I asked her directly, like, seeing all these developers and on there, like, is this quid pro quo? This looks like, you know, they're putting $10,000 into this campaign and they're eventually going to get a couple million to help build a new building here in Columbus. Like, what's going on there? It looks a little questionable. She said, you know, that's not, I don't view that as directly a problem. You can see how it could be and how there are questions around that, but we don't really know the conversations behind closed doors to really make an informed opinion on that. And that's a very fair argument. What the really interesting thing that she talked to me about was explaining the difference between the bonds and the levies, right? The bond issue campaign is saying, like, hey, this will not raise taxes, right? This will not raise taxes. And in the short term, that's true. But like you said, if catastrophe happens and they're unable to pay back these bonds, that may become an issue.
So, okay. So speaking of, you said there's levies. So there is a zoo levy on the ballot that would involve taxes. And then there's an Adam H. levy, which is the Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board. So whenever you look at your ballot, you're going to see the bond issue is 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But then there's two more, the zoo and Adam H. But those involve taxes, right?
And if you live elsewhere, there may be even more.
Even more.
You know, we have Westerville having a school levy. We have a lot more races in this campaign. But yeah, we're going to have these levies, which, you know, do, if not sustain the tax rate, they may increase it. Right. They're replacement and renewal levies. It depends. You have to read each one to kind of suss that out and figure out what's going on.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us to talk about all of this. Thanks to WOSU News reporter George Shilcox. Thanks for being here today, George.
Thanks, Amy. Glad to help.
And coming up, we are going to hear from both candidates in the Columbus City Council race. So up first, we'll hear from Jesse Vogel. And then later in the hour, we'll hear from Tiara Ross. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The race for Columbus City Council District 7 has been the most competitive race for a council seat in recent memory. We'll talk to the two candidates this hour. Later, we'll hear from Tierra Ross. But up first is Jesse Vogel. Jesse is a Democrat and an attorney. He has worked with organizations like Legal Aid of Central and Southeast Ohio and the Community Refugee Immigration Service, also known as CRIS. Vogel graduated from Oberlin College and got his law degree from Ohio State University. Welcome back to All Sides, Jesse.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me.
So the biggest difference between you and Tierra Ross is that she is a city insider and you are campaigning as an outsider in city politics. This has led to you butting heads with the city sometimes, but why should voters pick an outsider? Can an outsider really get anything done in Columbus, especially when no one on city council is endorsing you?
Amy, thanks for the question. Absolutely, we can get something done for Columbus. My background is as in a legal aid attorney representing renters struggling with bad housing conditions, and now I work as an immigration lawyer. But even before that, I have dedicated my life to working with folks to solve problems. During the pandemic, on the floor of my studio apartment in law school, I was organizing volunteers to get word out to neighbors facing eviction about their rights as tenants. And I'm really running for Columbus City Council because I believe, so many people believe, we all believe that we can do better as a city if we work together for results on housing affordability, on transit that works and gets folks where they need to go, on access to childcare and pre-K. This is a critical time in Columbus as we see a federal government changing and cutting funding to the local level. And so what we need on city council is someone who has experience as an advocate, who can ask tough questions in a body that often votes 9-0 the same way without much discussion or debate, and build coalition to win results like I've done as a legal aid lawyer representing low-income folks going up against a system stacked against them.
So you have said you wanted to bring new ideas to council and that you're willing to criticize actions by current council, which current council usually is a united force. They run as a slate. You know, they vote 9-0 to on a lot of things. So but what good will it do if you do some votes that are 8-1?
Well, look, Amy, you know, all it takes is one person on council to ask a question and get a conversation going. You know, we often see on council members vote on consent agendas, 9 pieces of legislation packaged up together. It just takes one hand to raise a motion and a vote to say, let's split this up and take a closer look at some of the spending and priorities that we've got as a city. You know, we're facing next year a projected $60 million budget shortfall in Columbus. And so what that means is that we're going to have hard conversations and ask questions. I saw a few months ago we passed $6 million for 2 new police helicopters. And now we're sitting in Columbus watching as the federal government is cutting SNAP benefits for hundreds of thousands of our residents. And we could have maybe done a better job of preserving some resources to make sure that we're providing what people need to survive.
Well, City Council did allocate $25,000 just this week to
that's
SNAP.
That's right. And that's
but
great.
You're saying it should have been more.
It's a drop
yeah.
in the bucket.
Yeah.
And I think some of the planning that we need to do has to do with asking tough questions, using our oversight authority in the mayor's offices and departments to see if the spending priorities are getting what we need in terms of the kind of housing people actually can afford, for example. And also, I got to say, these folks on council, you know, I've sat down with every one of them and I know that they want to get things done. I know that a system that's put in place that sort of plucked folks up there without having the opportunity to build a broad-based campaign like we've done in this race, engaging hundreds of volunteers to knock thousands of doors. They haven't had that experience in a long time. So what we did was unusual. I know once we win, hopefully, if we win, we'll have lots of folks who want to work with us and build coalition to win for working people across the city.
So all members of city council have endorsed your opponent. City Council President Shannon Hardin has been saying repeatedly since the beginning of this campaign that there has always been an African-American woman on council for decades, and he wanted an African-American woman for this seat. So what do you say to that?
I say the question for voters is whether they want to see more of the same or whether they believe, like I do, that Columbus can do better. You know, Columbus District 7 has the census tract in the state of Ohio with the lowest life expectancy on Harmon Avenue corridor between Greenlawn Cemetery and the highway, where people are dying at 60 because we have made decisions that haven't prioritized their lives. I've been a legal aid lawyer working largely with Black women as clients, and I've sat across tables from them and gotten to know their families and looked them in the eyes and fought for the, you know, the majority of renters in this city who have evictions filed against them are Black folks in our community. And yet we have, rising rents and rising eviction rates. So I think what's unacceptable is that we haven't stepped up to the plate as a city to deliver for low-income people, African-American folks, people of color who have fought to build this community what it is. And, you know, I think we need some change right now in Columbus.
All right. So you're basically saying you're not an African-American woman, but you've worked closely with them and you've been trying to help them as
well. Well, and I think that the best way we can support African-American women across the city is to look closely at the problems that they face: rising evictions, infant mortality, lack of access to education in our community, and fight for solutions. And that's going to take doing things a little differently than we've done in the past. And I believe I'm best suited to do that.
Now, council has expanded to more seats, but every seat is voted on by the full city. So you are going to represent District 7, but in this campaign, you have to get people to vote for you from the whole city. Do you think this is the best system, or do you wish it was just District 7? I mean, we can't really change it now, but what do you think?
Yeah, it's a system we got. Mm-hmm. In the primary, I was able to win 19 percentage points, the voters within District 7.
But that doesn't help you.
But it does. But I lost by 600 votes overall.
Yeah.
This time I'm planning on winning. Mm-hmm. It's going to take all of us to get out the vote to make sure that happens. I think what I've heard after that result was a lot of people who said, this is really confusing. It doesn't really make sense. Feels a little like voter suppression to say that, you know, people in District 7, the District 7 representative is voted on by folks who don't live there. Mm. I think that's also a barrier to entry to running competitive races in Columbus, which is partly why we've had a small insider club who've often chosen their own for who's next for a seat. I think that's led to worse representation because representatives don't have to work to be accountable to their neighborhood. They run across the city to find money and votes. I think that is a problem for representation. It's a system we got for now. In the next week, I'm hoping to win. And then I think there's a conversation that could be had with a broad set of coalition partners about whether this is the right system for our city at this moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the result would be of that.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the city council race for District 7. In a few minutes, we'll hear from candidate Tiara Ross. And right now, we're talking with candidate Jesse Vogel. Earlier in the campaign, you were criticized because a large portion of your money was from people outside of the state. But the most recent financial documents that you reported, you seem to have fixed that, right?
Yeah, look, we've got hundreds more Columbus donors than my opponent. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people across the city, thousands really, have invested in this work at a median contribution of $50 a pop. We've been in living rooms and restaurants and bars talking with voters and supporters about what they think of Columbus and what we can do better. And I'm grateful to have their support in this race.
Now, you've raised almost $500,000. That's a lot of money for a local Columbus City Council race. What have you been using the money for?
Well, Amy, it's an expensive proposition. We've always known to educate voters in a citywide race like this one. But that's what matters. We need to get the word out to voters, help them understand the choices on the ballot, and make the right choice. So what we've done with our funding is we've run a really professional race, the likes of which Columbus hasn't seen in a little while, involving paid staff on the ground organizing grassroots phone banks and door knocking and handing out literature at polling places. We've also spent money on paid media because in a city of 900,000 people, you can't knock on every door. We need to get the word directly out to targeted voters who we know are most likely to turn out. And so we've used digital ads and direct mail as well to tell the story of this race.
Now, you did decide to do a what we'll call, quote unquote, a negative mailer, right, where you wanted to draw attention to Tierra Ross's issues with parking tickets in the past. So what made you have that decision instead of just sending out all like, I'm Jesse Vogel, vote for me in mailers, but doing the sending a, quote unquote, negative mailer?
Well, some people call it negative. I call it telling the truth.
Okay.
You know, the truth is that voters care about who we are in this race, who the two candidates are. And part of that has to do with questions about whether or not we're well suited to be accountable to people once we get into office. You know, this issue about the parking tickets, everyone's got tickets. It's not really about the tickets. It's about accountability. You know, my opponent's been a city attorney, prosecuting law against others, taking in a city salary of six figures. And, you know, over that time, she racked up parking tickets and was driving on a suspended license multiple times. You know, I understand she's paid the tickets. But, you know, the question is for voters whether this is somebody who we believe will hold themselves accountable once in office. And, you know, it's uncomfortable to go directly and tell the truth about a race. But really what did it for me was having conversations with people at their doorsteps, asking me, what do you think of what's going on in city council? And what do you think about the story about this person who, you know, racked up 42 parking tickets over 3 years? You know, when, you know, my barber the other day was telling me her car was towed after three tickets by the city. There feels like a double standard there. And we have to talk about accountability if we're going to talk about how to engage more people in a project of changing our city and holding ourselves accountable to do the best work possible to deliver results for the residents of Columbus, which is what they deserve.
Let's talk about the biggest issue facing the city right now, which is the lack of affordable housing. The city's trying to pass, on the same ballot you'll be on, they're trying to pass a $1.9 billion bond package. $500 million of that is supposed to go to housing. What would be your approach to fix affordable housing in the crisis in this city?
Yeah, I think it's a multi-pronged crisis. Mm-hmm. And as a tenant's lawyer, I've experienced the harm of that. Number one, I think in this affordable housing bond package, we need to target some of that funding towards preserving existing housing that's at risk of being lost when it's, you know, a family owner passes away or decides they can't continue to rent out a place and an investor out of town purchases it up. That's losing housing. We're not going to get more if we lose it. Number two, we got to tackle the illegal practices of some of the bigger landlords that are fixing rents amongst themselves using high-tech AI tools and algorithms. That's something that you know, the federal government went off after in the Biden administration. Some localities have passed laws to address that. I think we could too. And number three, we got to provide tenants the opportunity to purchase their own homes. And we got to help low-income seniors stay housed by providing targeted property tax relief, including by asking some of the companies and developers that have contributed to this city to pay their fair share and to provide some of that relief using some of the funds that they've got on hand.
And related to your last point there, the city has offered a significant amount of tax abatements over the years. The positive on a tax abatement is that it draws more businesses to the city. They decide to locate there due to the tax breaks. There's more jobs then. But the negative means that if they're not paying taxes, then it's less taxes for city services, less taxes for Columbus City schools. Would you vote in favor of tax abatements if elected to council?
I would take a hard look at tax abatements and vote no more of the time than I think some of the council members currently there, because the truth is that what we need to know when any of these companies is coming before council is this something the market can provide on its own? And if that's the case, there's no role for a tax abatement to address that need. In addition, you know, I think we need accountability on when those tax abatements are given out, what are we getting in return? I'd like to put out a white paper that shows, you know, what we asked for and what we received. Mm-hmm. And when we're not receiving what we asked for in terms of housing affordability or jobs, we need to claw some of that back. Finally, I think you can get better deals in some of the tax abatements. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're giving out tax incentives, the benefit of our public dollars to a housing provider, maybe let's ask for a lease that says you're not going to evict for non-payment of rent until you go through a mediation to make sure a tenant has the opportunity to pay. You know, I think we need to make sure our dollars are not being used to harm people in Columbus. I think there's a lot better deals we can get. And I think we got to say no to some of the tax abatements that come before council.
All right. We're down to just under 2 minutes. Election day is Tuesday. Early voting is underway. What do you want voters to know about you?
I want voters to know that this year they have a real choice on the ballot. You know, my whole life, I've been advocating for folks in our neighborhoods, you know, as a volunteer before I was even a lawyer getting paid as a salary to do this. I was organizing neighbors to address an eviction crisis during the pandemic, just because I knew it was the right thing to do and we had something we could get done. You know, I'm not somebody who's beholden to the same set of folks already on council. I'm somebody who will stand up and ask tough questions and advocate for results, just like I have as a legal aid attorney and now an immigration lawyer, trying to help our people stay and build productive lives in Columbus.
All right. We've been talking with Jesse Vogel, candidate for Columbus City Council. Jesse, thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk to City Council candidate Tierra Ross. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The race for Columbus City Council District 7 has been the most competitive race for a seat on council in recent memory. We're talking with both candidates in this race this hour. We just heard from Jesse Vogel, and now we'll hear from Tierra Ross. Tierra is an assistant city attorney and a Democrat. She calls herself a community advocate and a public servant. She graduated from Ohio State and has her law degree, also from Ohio State. She has been with City Attorney Zach Klein's office since 2018. Welcome back to All Sides, Tierra.
Thank you, Amy. It's good to be here.
So one of the biggest differences between you and Jesse Vogel is that you've been inside the city system. Tell me the benefit of joining council with that inside knowledge.
Yeah. One, it is a very unique inside knowledge that I have had. I serve as deputy chief of the city attorney's property action team, which was formerly known as the Zone Initiative at the city attorney's office. And it's a small group of attorneys that city attorney Rick Pfeiffer basically challenged to get out into the community. Don't stay at your desk. We want to understand what folks are going through and use the nuisance abatement law that we have in Ohio to be able to bring solutions to those issues. So in explaining to folks, I always say, think about your run-of-the-mill code violations, vacant and abandoned homes, all the way up to drug houses or businesses that experience chronic criminal activity, or large multifamily apartment complexes that have slumlords who are not putting money back into the property in the way that they should so that folks live in safe, quality housing in our community. And so it has given me the opportunity not just to have an understanding of the city system, but to have a really unique understanding of our community, to have the opportunity to have met and built rapport with folks that are living in the community, to hear what their issues are and literally work with them to bring solutions, sometimes solutions that immediately bring reprieve to a neighborhood, that immediately mitigate violent crime in a neighborhood, allow their children, folks' children to play next door because there was a drug house you know, on the other side of the street, or go to the park because there was also a drug house next to the park. And folks are literally scared. And so it's been a real honor for me to serve the residents of the city of Columbus in that way. Quite frankly, I'm going to miss it, but I look forward to being able to use those lessons learned to bring it to an advocacy place on council to help more people. There are a ton of things that us as lawyers don't get to do until the thing happens, right? And so the tragedy has already happened. The crisis has already happened. And so we're working to mitigate the effects of that. I would love to be able to use those lessons learned to pull some of those resources upstream so we can be more preventive. I think we are too big and too smart of a city in Columbus to not do some of these things first, right? To start prevention work in a real way, to really make sure that we are transforming lives a lot earlier in the process. So I'm super excited to be able to do that. I think my experience really helps me both understand where to advocate, because a lot of people don't know what levers they need to pull, don't even know who to ask, don't know where to ask for that information. And in talking to folks, you realize I know where all the resources are. It doesn't help if I'm the only one that knows, right? And those resources aren't reaching the folks that actually need the support. But then also the experience of really just knowing folks and folks being excited to continue to work with me because they know that I have brought results to folks in the city of Columbus.
Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin has endorsed you, along with all other members of the current city council. But Shannon Hardin made it clear from the beginning of this campaign that he wants an African-American woman in this seat. There's been an African-American woman always on council for decades. So what do you think of that? Does that give you an advantage?
You know what? I want to make it clear that I also want to see a Black woman in this seat because I know what it meant as a little girl to see Black women in leadership. It allowed me to know and understand that I could also do that. And I think that representation is way more than just filling a seat and making sure you're reaching a quota for the amount of diverse people that you have on a body. But when we look at Black women and understand that they are one of the fastest growing demographics in this community, have served as a strong voter base for the Democratic Party over years, but are also at the top of the list for some of our largest issues that we have in our community. When you think about eviction rates, when you think about chronic health disease, when you think about infant mortality, when you think about uterine fibroids, right? Literally over half of my friend circles have this, but no one's talking about it. And so representation means more than just coming to a seat to fill a seat. It means a shared lived experience. It means understanding some things that don't even have to be said, right? Black women literally have a nonverbal cue. You understand it when you see it and you know it. And having shared experiences really allows you to bring that to the table at all times. I don't have to learn it. I don't have to ask people about it. I've lived it and I know it. And I think that is the important thing to have from a representation perspective. And our young people need to always see what they can be. And so I'm just proud to be able to carry that on, to be able to make sure that our young Black girls in this community always see someone that they can aspire to be and work that they can aspire to do.
Your campaign is supported by most of the party's elected officials in power in Columbus. Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, Mayor Andrew Ginther, City Attorney Zach Klein, the entire city council, as I said. What do you think of all that support?
I'm honored. I think it. I'm also just anxious about it. That's a level of accountability that you have to have. And I want to make sure that the folks who have lended their reputations, have lended their name, have lended their support, receive from it. But really, our community receives from it. I think it is a message to the work that I have done over nearly a decade for the residents of this city. You know, they are not endorsing me. Some of them never have not even known me, but they know my work. I think about Councilmember Green, who endorsed me. We worked together a ton on the west side of the community when she was working for the city of Columbus. She didn't know me personally before then. We really don't know each other personally, but she is so passionate about the work we were able to do together and wanting to continue that work for the residents of the west side of this city. I'm so excited about having the endorsement of Prosecutor Favor. This was literally her seat. And so having the endorsement of the person that sat there before, and not because she knew me either. We met each other when I started working at the city attorney's office in 2018. But because when she called, I was literally the one to answer the phone. When she needed help for tenant protections, to increase those tenant protections, I was the one to help write some of that legislation, to help prosecute some of that legislation, to actually help demand from the administration assistance so that we can enforce some of the laws that we have on the books. And so I'm truly just honored to be able to have that support, but certainly don't think I got it just because I was appointed or selected in some back room. It was because of the work that we've all done together to make the lives of the residents of this city better here in Columbus.
In your most recent financial report that your campaign put out, you raised about $182,000, and then incumbent council members put forward about 65% of the money you have. So it's about $300,000 in in-kind contributions. Why is most of your money coming from three or four people instead of a lot of people?
Sure. So there is a slate that's running. I was endorsed by council, so I have an opportunity to do that. So some of that work was work from me, but just checks written to other council members. Mm-hmm. Largely hasn't been a large donor who has not literally sat down, met with me, talked to me about my vision for the city of Columbus. It's certainly not donations that I'm receiving without having to do the work to earn that money. And again, it is about 1 million people that live here in the city of Columbus, which means it takes a lot of money to be able to reach the amount of residents that we need to one, get out the vote, but also to make sure that they are selecting my name when they go into the ballot and to let them know about what our vision is for the city of Columbus. And so I'm really grateful to have had that support, but I've done the work right alongside with them. You'll see me at fundraisers. I'm talking to as many folks. I'm calling as many folks as possible. And I'm really excited to have been able to also raise a ton of money from folks who have never given to a campaign before, who are excited about seeing me run for Columbus City Council, folks who have raised me, who have been a part of my village since day one, in communities that are in District 7, in communities that want to see District 7 grow and thrive. So I'm really excited to have support from literally every stakeholder you can imagine here in the city of Columbus.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Columbus City Council race for District 7 seat with Tierra Ross, candidate Tierra Ross. I was talking with the other candidate, Jesse Vogel, earlier, and Jesse Vogel is using some of his money that he raised, and he put out what he called an informative mailer, what I called a negative mailer. But you can call it whatever you want, but it was a mailer that went to city residents and it was related to your parking tickets. So, and this is also an issue that has been got it heated at a few of the debates that you've done. Audience members, and you know, the reason the mailer exists is because they're questioning your reliability because of your past issue with parking tickets and driving with a suspended license. So what do you say about the mailer and about the parking tickets?
One, I would say I'd also describe it as a negative mailer. I would let you know that there were two negative mailers that were sent out with the same information. And so I question whether or not it was an effort to be informative versus an effort to just be negative and to get the word out. I think that in talking to folks after those mailers came out and knocking doors, I'm not sure that that message landed as well as my opponent intended it to land. I want to, but also pivot from that, because I think that accountability is important. And I think that gaining the trust or regaining the trust citizens of this community is really very important. And
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm saying we can call the mailer informative or call it negative, but it is
true. The reality is it is true. The reality is that I took immediate steps to rectify it. Both issues. The reality also is when I was young, I had a pretty terrible driving record. I have a heavy foot. And when I say terrible, it just meant that I drove fast as a young kid. And the parking tickets were the result of, working downtown, going from meeting to meeting, being in a hearing, not having my phone, meter expires, not being able to re-up it, and really just letting those tickets get out of hand. And I'm okay with owning that mistake and rectifying it, have put things in place so that never happens again. And I really look forward to moving forward from that. I think part of running for office and part of being a leader is being able to own your mistakes and doing that unafraid and unabashedly, and also being able to move forward and rebuilding trust where trust needs to be rebuilt, but also keeping the main thing, which is the vision for this city, and making sure that folks understand that I have spent the lion's share of my career very much passionate and dedicated to the service of the residents of this city, and I only intend to continue to do that.
The biggest issue facing Columbus right now, arguably, is the lack of affordable housing. The city's trying to pass a $1.9 billion bond package. In that is $500 million for housing. Do you think that that's what the bond package says it'll do is the right approach to fix the affordable housing crisis?
One, I like that it's a bond package, so we're not looking at increased taxes for people. You know, in hopes that the city is going to be able to pay that back so that we don't see increased taxes for people. And I believe that the city will be able to do that. You need dollars to be able to build. And quite frankly, we haven't been building at the rate of our growth for several years now. When I started in 2018 and we were thinking about, you know, what to do with folks, whether or not to shut down properties or try to keep them open and work with landlords, that was a big thought in our mind, was we actually don't have a place to put people because we were looking at a housing deficit back then. That housing deficit has only continued to grow over time. And so in order for us to catch up and reduce the demand for housing, we're going to need money to be able to build. I think the important thing is where we build, what we build, and for whom we build it for, and making sure that this housing stock that we are putting in this community is actually affordable for the people who can afford it. And looking at that workforce and transitional housing, where we have one of our largest deficits in our community, and then also senior housing, where we also have a very large deficit of housing stock, and making sure we are building that so that we can have healthy mm-hmm. continuums of housing in each of our neighborhoods in our community.
Another issue that's been significant for the city in recent years is the amount of tax abatements. The positive for tax abatements is, you know, bringing businesses to the city, enticing them to come here, and then that results in more jobs. But the negative has been less taxes for city services and Columbus City Schools, among other things. Would you vote for tax abatements when they come before council?
If the tax abatement is going to benefit the community in the way that we need it to benefit the community, then I will. If it is not, then I will make sure that we're having those conversations and asking those questions. And if we need to vote no, I need to vote no. Sometimes a no vote helps to encourage conversation that may not have happened. Sometimes a no vote brings transparency to the community as well. And maybe I vote yes, but also say, we need to be more transparent about this process. We need to be more transparent about what we believe this abatement is going to bring to the community. We also need to understand, is this what the community feels like they need, right? Is it going to do the job in which we intend for it to do through this incentive? I remember filing a lawsuit against the owners of Colonial Village, which was one of the largest apartment complexes that we have in the city. And in writing the complaint, I realized that those owners had 2 12-year abatements on the property, and trying to, one, find the documents that would show me, like, okay, what were these abatements for? What did they require them to do? Do we even have leverage? Do we have additional leverage that I can use to hold these folks accountable through that abatement process? Actually, was really difficult. And so I think some of the low-hanging fruit is, you know, what is our document retention process? How are we keeping these documents? What is our enforcement process, which I know for a fact is getting stronger because I've been in those conversations. I started those conversations after writing that complaint. But making sure that we make, you know, enforcement and accountability just as big as part of this process as giving out the incentive as well.
One other big issue for the city is safety. There's a lot of neighborhoods around the city, but District 7 in particular includes downtown, the Short North, Franklinton. There's a safety concern down there. How would you let people know that you'll keep them safe?
Yeah, I think, well, one, I believe that housing is a foundation of safety in every community. And I think that what we're seeing in particular in downtown Columbus is people in need, a lot of need. And that is resulting in a lot of quality of life issues for the residents that are living downtown, and concerns that are relevant concerns, but concerns that we're not going to be able to prosecute or jail our way out of, concerns that we need to really think about what are the root causes of why we are seeing the issues that we are seeing, and being tough on the root causes of what we are seeing in our community. And part of that is the increase in our unhoused population downtown. We are seeing that a lot more. We are seeing our unhoused population living in parks and, you know, sleeping maybe in open vestibules of vacant buildings, right? And so I think it requires a comprehensive view at what public safety could look like, both in terms of making sure that folks have their basic needs, but also in terms of a plan. I was talking to one of the developers in the Short North, and I was talking about the lack of a plan. This place has organically grown over time, right? Mm-hmm. Started as a residential and is now becoming quote unquote entertainment district of sorts, but we haven't really seen a plan for what that should look like, what resources you need to have that be successful in a community. And you've seen it be successful in other communities. I think there are other communities we can look to get some support. And so I think from a public safety perspective, accountability can't be lost, right? But we also need to be looking at what are the root causes of why we are seeing the issues that we're seeing. Because if we're not addressing those, then we're never going to get the results that we're looking for.
All right. We're down to less than a minute. All right. So I wanted to let you end with what would you have people say? You know, the election is Tuesday. Early voting's underway. What do you want people to know about you?
Yeah. One, I'm so excited and honored to have been able to go through this process, to have met so many of you, to have talked to so many of you, to have excited so many of you about the work that we can do together. If you are looking for a community advocate, someone who's been in community, who understands community, and who is able to deliver real results, I am the candidate that you should vote for. We are in a time in which it is not enough to check a box anymore. We really have to move the needle on behalf of real people, and that's going to take community like never before. That's going to take us being neighbors, and I look forward to being your neighbor and to being your servant for the long haul.
We've been talking about the Columbus City Council race for District 7, and you just heard from candidate Tierra Ross. Thanks for joining us, Tierra.
Thank you, Amy.
And earlier in the hour, we talked with candidate Jesse Vogel. And again, Election Day is Tuesday. Early voting in Ohio continues until November 2nd. Polls are open on Election Day from 6:30 a.m. till 7:30 p.m. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.